In order to get out, I tried to pop through the closed window as I had done many times before, only this time the glass pane was like thick bendy industrial perspex, perhaps 2 or 3 millimeters thick. It bulged out with my pressure, but it took determination to pop it, and in the end only the intention to be outside managed to break it. Outside I was aware that this was a very low-dimensional counterpart of the physical Earth. The light was a murky dusk, and as I bent down towards ground level to study it more closely in order to attain full waking consciousness, I was surprised yet again by the amount of random detail. As well as grass, some of which was dried out, I saw tiny pebbles and stones lying on cracked hardened ground. There was some litter as well, splinters of wood, parched pieces of crumpled up paper and sawdust, and traces of industrial waste. I looked up and around to identify the location, considering it to be physical, because of the incredible random physical appearance, but the fact that I sensed the locality of my home convinced me that I would have to be on the next non-physical dimension. Having focused on the detail of the ground so intensely, my consciousness had emerged into a state of complete wakefulness and astonishing clarity. Soon I became aware of human activity, and as I looked up I saw houses, and people walking along the road on the outskirts of a town. The fact that the people could see me and looked at me, although slightly curiously, convinced me that I was in non-physical reality and, judging by the appearance of the inhabitants, I was on a lower dimensional counterpart close to Earth. A dead giveaway of this is people looking just normal, like everyday people in our physical world, which means the higher state of mind has not been realized that would render people more attractive. I decided to pay attention and investigate so I could compile a detailed report of what life was like on such low dimensions. I started by asking a couple of young men coming towards me, one of them with tattoos on both arms, whether they were aware that they were dead. They looked at me as if I was slightly mad. "Of course," was the answer, "if you want to call this dead." I apologized and asked them whether they would object if I asked them a few questions regarding their lives over here. They did not seem to be too keen, if not unfriendly, and suggested that perhaps I should go to the pub down the road, have a drink and chat to some of the other locals. With that they proceeded on their way. At the end of the road was a pub. It wasn't run down as such, but it was not the kind of premises that would have attracted my patronage on the physical dimension. It was simply in keeping with the general bleakness of the environment. There was litter in the street and the sky was covered with thick dark clouds. It even started to drizzle, which added an element of coldness and discomfort to the atmosphere. Most of the people I passed looked somewhat gloomy. I was acutely aware that the clouds were simply a manifestation of the negative atmosphere of the place, as was the cold drizzle of rain as well as the litter. All of this I attributed to negative thought junk that was flying around. I also sensed that some of the negativity emanated from the physical world, and I felt sorry for the people here having to put up with the negativity originating from the dimension inhabited by people who hadn't a clue how their thoughts and feelings determined the atmosphere of a world they didn't even know existed. We truly are citizens of multiple worlds, I thought. Everything we do, think or feel is reverberating through multiple dimensional levels, and there is little we can do about it. The universe is far more complex than we can ever imagine. Following my thoughts like this, I began to wonder whether the slight resentment I encountered was because I was identified as a visitor from the physical world and as such at least partly blamed for contributing to the atmosphere. Having walked in thought all the way over to the pub, I entered without drawing too much attention. Music was playing in the background and a couple sat at the bar drinking. A scantily dressed woman in her 30s with red hair and covered in freckles came towards me. She was average looking, slightly full around her waist, not entirely unattractive. She exposed her breasts and asked me whether I wanted some fun. I was shocked by her blatant approach as she took my hand and guided it towards her breasts. I was too taken aback to react, but felt ill at ease. Not wanting to offend her, I gave her a gentle hug and kissed her on her forehead. I apologized and told her that my time was very limited and I had originally intended to find my father. She seemed to understand and told me that if I wanted to make love to her, I knew where I could find her. Something about her evoked my compassion. I sensed a person who desired genuine love without being quite clear about how to give it. This feeling ignited empathy and then love, and I sent a powerful wave of affection towards her. This had an instant and rejuvenating effect on her. It brought a generous smile to her face, which made her look quite lovely. I was almost shocked how radically a genuine feeling of love can manifest an effect. I left the pub and ventured into the road. I couldn't imagine that after so many decades my father would linger in a dull, lowly place like this. When my father was alive, he was very popular and had many friends. He would sing, play the guitar and entertain people. I never ever experienced him scolding me. He had always been thoughtful, engaging in play and discussion rather than punishment. On the rare occasions when discipline was required, he would withdraw privileges, such as not having my allocation of cake on Sunday or having to take an early night, but I never remembered him uttering a word in anger. Outside in the open, I made an effort to raise my vibration in order to prime myself to see my dad, imagining him to be on a much higher dimension from where I was at present. I chanted my familiar mantra, which had the effect that I was lifted up into the air, but I soon slammed into a ceiling, which appeared to be impenetrable. Frustrated, but not deterred, I decided instead to focus all my energy on my father and put my trust in the universal laws of attraction to guide me to him. Instead of being picked up and rising towards heaven, a powerful current grabbed me and pushed me groundwards into the earth. Despite this, the experience was not unpleasant and I allowed myself to be swept away, trusting that the outcome would be a positive one. Soon enough I found myself in the courtyard of a farm with whitewashed walls and a barn to my right. I knew beyond any doubt that this place was on our physical earth in a distant part of Russia. How, I did not know, but I felt a distinct certainty of the rough locality, which was in the eastern part of Russia. The people living on the farm did not seem to be wealthy by any means, but they managed to survive and prosper. In the yard where I came to rest were two little boys who seemed to be brothers, one about 9 or 10 years old and the other a little younger. Physically they didn't seem to notice me, but astrally one of them did. With the same powerful knowing, I recognized the older one as my father. The boy stopped what he was doing, looked in my direction and without opening his mouth he asked, "Jurgen?" With this powerful thought of his recognition, I accepted that my father was reincarnated as a child in Russia. When I asked him who his younger brother was, I learned that it was his father and his mother was the same mother who died when he was a child. My father had lost his parents when he was just 2 years old and he grew up in an orphanage. He was now reincarnated to experience what he never had, a family and what it was like to grow up within and be part of a family, with both of his beloved parents being with him now. I considered the mechanics in place when my mother had told me only a few weeks ago that she'd had contact with my father, telling me that he was on a higher dimensional level and the last time she met him, he was painting. I now could see after my father still recognizing me as Jurgen that on the subconscious or higher consciousness level this information is not lost, and that we can still interact with the higher dimensional bodies of a person when we are dead and our loved one has made it back to the physical world. This information led me to conclude that on higher consciousness levels we have mature non-physical bodies, which carry all the information from our past lives. No matter what happens, consciousness is a continuum and separation an illusion of our three-dimensional thinking. This was a moving experience and not at all how I imagined I would meet my father. I now knew that when I died I would be able to be with my father on any of the dimensional levels I focused on and would see and communicate with him in the flesh of that dimension. This realization brought into focus a much larger aspect of reality and its inner workings. After this I became aware of my body, but decided to lie still and run through the events so I could write them down later. I then decided to return, as I still had a strong sense of presence in the other reality. I also wanted to return to the place to complete my notes. Sure enough, with just a slight effort of intent, I found myself back in the identical place in the village pub. The lady who had offered herself to me before was the two, and smiled at me when she saw me. This time, though, she was a little bit more reserved and introduced me to her family, who had joined her, her mother and her sister. I opened the door and asked them to come outside as I was curious to find out more how the inhabitants of this rather low-grade copy of the physical world operated. I asked how they lived, whether they used some form of money or currency to buy or sell things. The man told me that there was a kind of trading and explained it to me, but he began to confuse me and I wondered whether he was poking fun at me. I asked them why I did not see anybody flying in this world and I demonstrated by taking to the air and attempting to circle around the group, but noticed what a struggle it was and that it needed all my concentration to stay airborne. Why fly when we've got legs? Came the answer. It's too much of an effort. It will take me at least 2 weeks to become any good at it, the man said. I realized that, on this dimension at least, flying, although possible, was an unnatural pastime. We do have cars, he said, and pointed to a slightly retro-looking open-top sports cabriolet which went past us, a two-seater with two round headlights. I wanted to know whether it had occurred to them to move up in the world and pointed out that there were more pleasant regions they could inhabit. To my surprise, none of them accepted this as a reality, in very much the same way as some people wouldn't believe in life after death. The man told me that this was reality here and that it was best to keep one's feet on the ground. I couldn't argue with this as I looked around, seeing how real and solid this world must seem to them. I couldn't resist showing them some conjuring tricks, by projecting a powerful feeling towards the dark grey curtain of clouds, which tore them open and a shaft of golden light was cast down onto the ground. At the same time I projected other feelings into the air, conjuring up some luminous shapes which played over our heads and danced around until they disintegrated. Some smiled like they would at a fireworks display, but no more. I was left rather drained after my efforts. The lady I had met earlier asked me whether I would like to have a meal with them. We could talk at our leisure and they would explain everything I wanted to know. They were all very aware that I was an earthling and that I was having an out-of-body experience. I agreed to their suggestion. We walked past large fields, some with trees, some were growing curious-looking plants which looked artificial, like trees growing grass, which reminded me of a bio-experiment that had gone wrong. I noticed you don't grow any vegetables or other produce, I said. That's because we don't have much demand for food, the woman's sister said. I felt a bit silly with the suggestion as I knew only too well that food is not an essential commodity in this dimension. There is no beef either, she continued, but we had a couple of men opening a slaughterhouse not so long ago. Her statement surprised and shocked me as I imagined herds of cattle being killed and processed in a big abattoir. She told me that the men coming over here from Earth had had a business like that on Earth and thought it was quite natural to continue their profession over here. They rounded up all the cattle that had found its way into this region after dying and started a meat processing plant. The other inhabitants thought that the cows had suffered enough and soon put a stop to it. The man who was walking next to me grinned broadly as if it was a fine joke. We soon arrived at a house, 3 stories high. The inside was quite tastefully decorated and made a pleasant contrast to the rather drab surroundings we had just passed through. As we walked up the stairs, I made another valiant effort to fly up rather than walk, but found it extremely difficult and laborious. I had adapted to the general atmosphere and now understood why nobody was flying. When we arrived in the room upstairs, the table was already laid with food. I was touched by the hospitality and expressed my thanks by sending a warm feeling of love to my hosts. I held my hands over the woman's head and, to my surprise, and everyone's amusement, her hair sprouted into a new elaborate style with flowers interwoven with the strands of her hair. This was the last thing I remembered. 22nd of August, 2009. Next headline, Unreal Reality and Real Illusions. I had been thinking about an article a friend of mine had sent me about hypnagogic images, and before I went to sleep I contemplated her text. Focusing on the images that pop up on the screen of my mind before entering sleep with curiosity and interest can result in a wake-induced lucid dream, though nothing happened when I tried and I simply dropped off to sleep. When I woke up at 4 in the morning, I decided to meditate. Then after about an hour I went back to sleep with the intent of inducing a lucid dream using her technique. Again I simply dropped off to sleep. Curiously enough, in my dream I was thinking that I had to go back to my meditation room in order to practice the technique my friend had given me so that I could enter non-physical reality by conjuring up hypnagogic scenes. But without realizing that I was actually dreaming this, I then got involved in another dream scene in which I had been talking at length to a former work colleague of mine, suggesting to him that he could become lucid in a dream following the technique I was about to show him. This finally did the trick and I became fully lucid. I then noticed the strange surroundings I was in. This instantly presented me with full waking awareness. As usual, I immediately focused on the floor in front of me, which was strewn with leaves on a sandy ground, until I could distinguish every detail with incredible clarity. I keep being she still needed to explore and that she could still go out to explore the greater wonders of her world. Realizing by her interested facial expression that I knew more than she did, despite the fact that she was a permanent resident in this world, I proceeded to tell her what she could expect when she progressed from here. I told her that the most important aspect that would open the way for everyone was to develop an attitude of unconditional love. My mother looked at me with such love and sweetness when I said this to her that I burst out laughing, wondering who this jumped-up twit was lecturing this woman about unconditional love. I asked her whether she missed my father and she looked momentarily sad. "Do you know what happened to him?" I asked. She told me she had a vague idea and understanding. I then told her that he had reincarnated in Russia, but that on a much higher level she would still be able to contact him in the way she remembered him, despite the fact that a part of him had sought further experience on the physical level. With that she seemed reassured. I marveled at the thought of the vastness of possibilities in these worlds beyond the physical dimension and also at the intuitive knowledge I was drawing from as I explained everything to her. We proceeded to talk at length about a great number of issues she was presented with in this world. Even in real life, my mother and I had never discussed the issues of which she had been amazed by the superfine detail and questioned the belief some people maintain that what we see in the out-of-body state are simply our thoughts and our own fantasy projections. Studying such astonishing minutiae, obviously I cannot subscribe to this belief at all and can only assume that people who explain out-of-body experiences as fantasies have never actually had the experience or taken the trouble to look at our non-physical reality close up. Who or what makes all this? A world as real in every detail as our physical reality, and yet not physical at all? Or if so, it is a physicality subject to laws we don't yet understand or a parallel dimensional reality we normally have no access to. None of our sciences have paid any attention to this phenomenon so far and it is still seen by many as delusional. It's safe to say that with regard to understanding our own consciousness and its complex working environments, we haven't yet risen out of the dark ages. Not surprisingly, as it is only since 1879 that we invented psychology. For the moment, consciousness is boldly dismissed as a result of neuron activity within our brains which vanishes when the brain dies. The consideration that we might be occupying multiple dimensions and could possibly access these via shifts in consciousness seems way out of reach for serious consideration. Though the ways some scientists attempt to put it into a pathological box strikes me as negligent. All this aside, looking at the sand I had picked up from the ground, I began to wonder how far I could go to resolve all the detail. The richness and complexity I discerned was staggering, seeing swirling particles of matter. This is how deeply our minds can view without the use of an electroscanning microscope. How rewarding, how easy, how satisfying this was. The only thing that was more staggering was the exhilaration that my waking awareness had reached a new peak level. It had arrived at a super level of clarity, something never to be found in physical wakefulness. The physical world, I pondered, is a clear second when it comes to an experience of clarity and reality awareness. When I looked up, letting the sand I had picked up for my study run back to the ground through my fingers, I saw a group of children playing. I asked them whether they knew that they could fly, as this was what many would consider to be a dream and that they should try it. With that I lifted off the ground myself and took to the air, and soon found myself soaring into the sky. Then, to my astonishment and seemingly contradicting my earlier discovery, I noticed that the scene surrounding me had an element of artificiality to it, like the backdrop of a gigantic film set which could be likened to the Jim Carrey film The Truman Show. Immediately I started questioning my previous discovery that this world was as solid as our physical Earth. I began to speculate whether this might be attributed to the last remnants of a dream overlay that I had conjured up from a deep inner level of memory perhaps, and with that I floated towards the horizon, which was nothing more than a large painting projected onto a gigantic canvas. Without a second thought I was tearing it apart like a massive gossamer curtain. Beyond that I found myself dismantling an equally artificial scene while marveling at the mind's ability to throw such a curtain of deception over my world. To my great relief I finally found that the layers of illusions were gone and I was in a vast open landscape, real looking, which felt reassuringly solid again. There are layers to reality, some of which are projections. There is plenty of room to explore how consciousness conjures up different veneers of manifestation. It will take research, plenty of it, discrimination and serious study to find all the answers. I think it is this complexity of reality which makes it so hard to put it under a scientific microscope, but hopefully we can make a start by recording and trying to understand what is taking place. Illusions and projections show up in all kinds of manner. At that moment it felt as if I had pierced the illusionary element of the lucid dream and made the transition to the new dimension of reality proper. For a few moments I pondered what to do next and thought it would perhaps be a good idea to contact my mother again and catch up with her latest news. I called her and she appeared almost instantly in the distance. We floated towards each other. Somehow she looked sad and it was only when I hugged her that she cheered up. Her face instantly received a fresh youthfulness. "Why did you look so sad when I first saw you?" I wanted to know. She told me that life the two has its challenges and that feelings and emotions play a large part in the life over there, much more so than when back on Earth. I asked her whether she still had contact with Auntie Trudy, which she confirmed. "Yes," she said, "and with Oma, her mother, as well." With that she flashed an image of Oma to me and I was astounded that she was a young, good-looking woman, who I would never have recognized except by her distinct charisma, which belonged uniquely to her. Looking at my mother I then realized how fluidly appearances changed in this dimension. My mother looked different from the photos I had of her when she was a young woman and different from the last time we met, which was 10 months ago. She looked much more attractive, but the feeling of love and affection was the same. She then told me that there was still struggle in this world and there were plenty of issues that needed to be addressed for people to progress. She listened with interest when I told her of the higher levels of consciousness, how become aware. Now we were having a deep philosophical conversation. At one stage I asked her whether she was watching us on Earth. She told me she was not directly, as this would be an invasion of our privacy. She was aware of certain things and she could tune into what was going on, but she said she respected me far too much to get involved in my life in any way. Did she know where we lived? She told me she did, not the physical place as such, but she knew where she could find us on her dimension if she wanted to. With that we traveled to a sunny spot, a villa on a beautiful hilltop surrounded by a large garden and rockery. A sloping path from the villa led to a beautiful ornate swimming pool, nothing at all like the semi-detached suburban house we occupied in the south of England. Curiously enough, I recognized it as the house of my wife, and I was astonished that in real life I had no knowledge of it. My mother laughed. "It looks as if I know your house better than you do." I proceeded to investigate, and indeed every feature I looked at was incredibly familiar to me, and I wondered how many hours Julia and I may have spent here together when our bodies were in deep sleep, then waking up in the morning having no recollection of it. As we walked along the path with its low whitewashed walls and ornamental rose beds, she confessed that in the early days of our being together she was not at all sure whether we were suited for each other, as she noticed the great cultural and temperamental gap between us. She confessed she had been concerned that it would all end up in tears one day, but the fact that we were still together, even on this side, occupying a house together, had proved her wrong. I then asked her what had happened to all her friends, and I conjured up the parties of my parents I remembered from when I was a small boy. Her face lit up. "They are wonderful people. Yes, we are still together. Would you like to meet them?" I agreed. Within moments I found myself in a large park-like garden with a marquee containing an excellent spread of the finest cold buffet. I was greeted by one of her friends, who even as a young child I had always recognized as being extremely beautiful and attractive. She loved children, and whenever she saw me she crouched down before me, with a cigarette in one hand, and with the brightest and warmest smile one can imagine she held my hand and stroked my hair. "Oh, he is such a sweetie," she would say. She took my hand and gave me a warm, affectionate hug. "He is still a sweetie," she exclaimed, which made me burst out laughing along with everyone else at the party. I was overwhelmed by the intimate friendliness and the strong bond among this group of friends, and how much they appeared to be enjoying themselves. "You must try our food." One of my mother's friends offered me a plate onto which she loaded some food I was unable to identify. The aroma was invigorating. She then sprinkled bits on top of it and invited me to try it. This was something I had not expected. For a moment I wondered how it was possible to experience something so new and unusual, while at the same time wondering how certain psychologists on earth would explain such a phenomena. Some insist that what we dream about can only ever be what we experience in waking life, which we then re-edit and dress up in our dreams. I had long proved to myself that their assumption was totally wrong, and this was just a welcome reminder that there is another dimension awaiting us which offers varieties of experiences simply unknown to us here, allowing for creativity and original invention that by far surpasses anything we can conjure up on this worldly earth. Then one guest invited me to try something traditional, Bavarian wheat beer, which is still my favorite. "Once you've taken a sip of this," he said, "you will turn into a Bavarian." I took a sip and, smiling to myself, I slapped my thigh for a joke. "You are right," I exclaimed, "this is good stuff." Everybody fell about laughing after I had emptied a whole bottle and then started performing a fully-fledged Bavarian Schapplattler, an old-fashioned folk dance often attracting a hilarious response. As I had experienced many times before, people on this level know how to enjoy themselves. My experience ended abruptly when I heard Julia bringing me a cup of tea. The 2nd of November 2009 next headline: Using meditation to transcend dimensions. One thing I have become acutely aware of is the fact that our mindset determines our environment setting when we die. Unlike physical life, our surroundings will be furnished with the content of our subconscious. In physical life, some people living in abject poverty may take great delight and joy in a bunch of picked flowers from a field and placed in a rusty tin can, while other people living in luxury may be utterly corrupt, unhappy and oblivious to the apparent beauty of their acquired wealth if their state of mind is focused on the negative. In the afterlife, things are quite simple: what is in the inside is reflected in our environment. so the poor person's rusty tin can may turn into a Ming vase and the corrupt rich man may find himself squatting in a dark hovel surrounded by junk. One could define the afterlife in one sentence. The place you will live in after you die is a manifestation of your inner life. The following experience illustrates the futility of trying to help people out of their environmental conditions if their state of mind is not ready, despite all one's good intentions. This applies here to our physical reality as well, of course, but is much more in evidence and more graphic in our non-physical states.